All right, y'all, we are live on our social media platforms. And like always, I would love to welcome everybody to the Diaries of a Black Girl in Foster Care. Today, we're going to be talking about National Foster Care Awareness Month, National Foster Care Month, for those who refer to it as that. And yes, we're going to have another conversation about education. And like always, we're excited to be here. And this is a welcoming and safe space. So with that, I am Tashae Roberson Wing, and I recently graduated from OSU. I know y'all been hearing me every time. That's like, okay, I'm graduating soon, but it's done. It is in the books. Now I'm looking for a job. So, I am going to pass it to Casey to kick us off and introduce herself.
All right. Good evening, everyone. My name is Casey Getty, and I am the senior program analyst at the Center for the Study of Social Policy. And I'm also a foster care alumni, and I'm a business owner as well. And I am going to pass it to Alex.
Hello, everyone. I'm Alexandria Ware. My current role is a 4-H agent at K-State Research and Extension. I'm also a business owner, and I own a nonprofit called Culture Creative. I'm going to pass it back to Tashae so she can introduce herself.
And with that, I do want to recognize that we are missing Ahila and Imani today. They can't be with us, but we definitely miss them. But on the other hand, we have two wonderful guests, one being my mentor. So I'm going to pass it to Angie, and then we're going to pass it to Jocelyn just to talk a little bit about themselves and what they do.
Hi, y'all. Great to be here. I'm Angelique Salazan, and I'm currently the policy director at the Congressional Coalition on Adoption Institute, otherwise known as CCAI. It is a nonprofit organization that works with members of Congress to educate and resource them on all things child welfare, protection, adoption, both domestically and internationally.
And we're going to go to Dr. Douglas.
Hi, I'm Jocelyn. I am currently a social worker for the Department of Social Services. Specifically, I recently transitioned into prevention and in-home services from investigations. I'm also a business owner, I'm a mom, and I am a foster care alumni.
And an author.
Oh, forgot that.
Yes. And so, once again, just thank you both for joining us today. I'm excited to have y'all, and I know the other co-hosts are as well. And so, what is National Foster Care Month like? What does this mean to you all?
Jocelyn, you want to go first?
Okay. For me, I would just say it gives, I don't think we get enough credit as foster care alumni, but it does give us a month, a platform to bring awareness, to provide information. Yeah, it kind of highlights us in a sense, even though I don't think that is enough.
Yeah.
I think what it means for me is having more nuanced conversations about what that experience is like, and also an opportunity to highlight best practices, people who are doing good work, also highlight some of the bad, what's going on that youth are facing, what families are facing, but also give a space to recognize it, but also say that there might be a solution to whatever that issue might be, but also highlight people who have been in the trenches doing the work.
Yeah. And I would highlight that apparently National Foster Care Month started in 1988. And it was a way to highlight those who were in foster care, but also those working to provide services, their homes, and just family support and foster youth as well. And so what I've actually, I started looking a little bit more into this, and I see that some years people actually do different themes. And I want to say that the Children's Bureau, their theme this year is relative and kin connections, keeping family strong, which is very, very interesting. We got some ladies in the comments. And so with that, I'll move to our next question. And Alex and Casey, please feel free to jump in with this as well. But what are some efforts or issues that you all are highlighting in your profession and in regards to National Foster Care Month?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm highlighting anything per se. I've been out of care for some time, and I've highlighted the issue of education during my time in the New York City foster care system and did a lot of advocacy around that. I think my role at CCAI is really to give voice to youth who are currently experiencing what education is like in the education system, whether it be K through 12 or higher education or workforce programming. So really just making sure that I'm staying abreast of what is currently happening, what youth are currently dealing with, and how the system may or may not have solved said issues within, you know, their states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's
so small on my screen. I can't see.
Jocelyn, go ahead and answer, and then we'll go to the next person.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, for me, working in this field in child welfare, it's definitely, it's so interesting because not only do I have the experience of being in care and having a social worker, now I am that social worker. And so for me, I think it's so vital, especially for my teenagers who've been in care for some time. I empower them all the time. I speak life into them all the time. The resources that I find, I try to give them the education. In North Carolina, we have a program called LINCS, which is the kind of like a program who serves youth between 14, from ages 14 to I believe 23, or maybe 21, but I think there is still some services for people who are older than 21. But just like I said, connecting them to resources, uplifting them, finding resources, and just honestly making sure that they're educated, because so many people age out of care and they're not knowledgeable of resources. They're not motivated. They're not activated, and they're not stimulated because of so much trauma that they have experienced while in care, that they really don't have a plan. And they don't really have the resources. They don't have access to the support. And so that's why I think it's so vital. Education was kind of like my way out, in a sense. But I know we'll talk about that later. But yeah.
Y'all got me excited to go there. But I forget who was next. Was it Casey?
Yeah. So I was just going to jump in and say, like, you know, working at the center, you know, we're not really focusing on anything specifically on National Foster Care Month. But, you know, we're always doing the work, trying to change child welfare. And, you know, we have a lot of different initiatives going on there, even starting from prevention to, you know, ending the child welfare system, and even working with young people who are within child welfare and helping practitioners understand how to work with young people. So we're doing a whole lot of work that involves child welfare. But I do want to highlight, you know, what Angelique said about, you know, being an alumni now and no longer being in care. And I also feel like the pandemic changed like a lot of things as well. I feel like pre-pandemic, there was a lot of things to do during National Foster Care Month. Like, you know, Foster Care Alumni of America, we used to have the foster walks during May. You know, NFYI would have the Congressional Shadow Day, which they still do. It just hasn't been during May, but that was like a huge thing to do during May as well. Like Foster Club and their outstanding leaders would come out during the month of May. It would just be and even children's rights, like they highlighted and talked about education within those who were getting their higher education within child welfare, who were a part of child welfare as well. There was just a lot to do. And I just feel like, you know, now that with the pandemic hit, like a lot of things have changed, and, you know, it's just not, it doesn't feel like the same. It doesn't feel like it was like almost felt like a celebration, like a celebratory month, like to celebrate all the work that, you know, people, young people are doing, professionals are doing, and it just doesn't feel the same anymore. But, you know, that's why we need to bring the awareness back and continue to uplift this month, because it is a month that to not only celebrate the work that we have done, but to also bring awareness to those who are still within child welfare.
Y'all, I think my internet went out for a quick second, so I don't know. Woo, that was scary. I was just about to text y'all, but okay. So thanks for sharing. But before we move on to education, I did want to ask y'all, what are some things that we all can do as alum, but also professionals within the child welfare field in some capacity? Like, what can we be doing to bring awareness to National Foster Care Month?
I think just keeping it real. So a lot of times when we ask young people to come tell their stories, we don't ask them to come as their authentic selves. We ask them to just, let's strategically share and not share some things. Sorry, my phone's connected to my watch and my computer. And so we don't ask them to just like share what's really on their heart. We don't ask them about like healing. We don't talk to them about that stuff. It's more so like, come share, and we want you to share this and be our tokenized young person. But like, let those young people show up in those spaces and call you out. And it's going to be uncomfortable, but that's the only way change can happen. That's the only way we can bring awareness to National Foster Care Month, which I agree, it's not long enough, because foster care ain't no month. People are in this system 365 days a year. And y'all get to go home, and we got to stay with some random people we don't know, but that's a tangent for another day. But just allowing people to be themselves, allowing young people not to think that education is the only way out or having a career is the only way out. Showcasing what success looks to that, like that, to that young person during National Foster Care Month, because there's no one way to be successful.
I like that. Did anybody want to jump in and add to that? I would even add just extending ourselves outside of just child welfare and agencies that are doing the child welfare work, but getting down and dirty in communities, having conversations with community members, community organizations, grassroots organizations, to talk about what is happening within foster care, child welfare, and just expanding our scope to really best serve foster youth.
Yeah, and I think for me, it looks different because I left after undergrad my home state. So it's really important for me to find community where I live. And so I think that people can do a lot of things. You know, it's not always about being a foster parent or an adoptive parent. I think you can volunteer with a child welfare agency. I'm pretty sure they're in almost every community. So if there is a youth advisory board that's being started, that was important for me in DC, Maryland area, helping youth, you know, build their own advocacy and what that looks like for them when they're still in the child welfare system, when they're still connected to agencies. Youth do need supportive adults in their lives, and I think, you know, giving your time and service to organizations like CASA, like your local agencies, like nonprofits that are serving youth, I think it's really important to give your time where and when you can.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. Casey, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, no, I just echo what Angelique said, like, you know, definitely giving your time is very important, especially to young people. Like, mentorship, like we always talk about, you know, how young people do need mentors, and especially those that are in the foster care system. You know, mentorship can very much make a difference in a young person's life, just as much as, like, you know, having foster parents take care of older young people that are in foster care. And so, yeah, I would just say adding on mentorship would be important too.
Jocelyn, did you want to add anything before we move to education?
Now I think you guys hit all of the ones that I was going to say.
Cool. And so as we talk about foster care awareness, foster care, National Foster Care Month, one population that I kind of want to transition and highlight is this foster youth as they show up in the education system. And I love this type of space because not only are we all here with advanced degrees, but we all are Black women who once experienced foster care. And so I don't know. I feel like education is something we don't hit on a lot and don't recognize as a safety net for a lot of us. And so that kind of brings me into like my first question for you all. And
before you ask that question, can we just like take a moment and celebrate the Black excellence on this call? Like, please, because we all are Black women who have masters or PhDs and are working in real robust fields doing the work. So like,
yes,
just giving us like the credit that we did that. Like,
well, we 7 years was hard. All right.
Just, not to interrupt, but just giving us the credit because we did that.
Yes, I get it. Like, we definitely need to celebrate ourselves.
I was going to say, especially you, Tashae. Don't act like the last several months.
Ooh, honey.
You know.
So we got two grads on the call, too. So, you know.
Yeah.
PhD in the house.
Right.
Yes, it's definitely been a process. And that brings me to, like, asking you all, like, I know in life we have these aha moments, but what was your aha moment? Like, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and go towards these degrees.
We can start with our guest.
Oh, okay. For me, I always excelled in school. Like, school was my, it was one of the, I was able to be free. I felt free when I was in school. I wasn't at the foster home. I wasn't at the group home. School was my outlet. So I was always just at school. I was trying to be in dance and soccer and any extracurricular activities that I was interested in. It was always at that school because I'm like, if I can just be at school and away from that place that I really don't want to be at, I was good. And then when I went back there, it was just like, ugh. All over again. So I just always felt like school was my safe space and I excelled in it all the time. It doesn't matter how much my behavior or all the hell that was going on at home, school was always on point. Like I specifically remember when I was in like middle school, I went to like maybe 4 or 5 different middle schools and I still passed with straight A's. I don't know how it happened, but I feel like school was like a gift to me, you know? And so I just knew around 8th grade, I was like, after meeting my social worker, she was the amazing social worker. I still talk to her to this day. I just knew I wanted to do the work. And I was like, I'm going to go after this. I want to be an advocate. I want to sow into the lives of young people, all young people, but especially people who look like me, because we are well saturated in the system. And I can go on and on about the research around that, but African-Americans are definitely the number one population in the child welfare system. And so I just knew that this is where God has placed me. Like, he gave me this gift and I just wanted to excel to the highest level to be what I could be to my community.
I love that. I definitely love that. I think for me, I had like 2 critical points in my life. And one was in 5th grade. Like, I always in trouble. Like, I think I got in trouble because they gave us a journal. And I didn't know you really couldn't write how you really felt in the journal or the teacher was going to write it. But long story short, I ended up in school suspension for just the stuff I was writing in my journal. But that kind of became
suspend you for writing.
Because I kind of had some hit lists, like girls I wanted to slap.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Yes, but praise God for change. But you know, I was just going through so much. And like my teachers really started to like go on walks with me in the morning or, you know, write me notes. And I remember literally to this day, I have it somewhere. It's somewhere in my room. But my fifth grade teacher gave me a journal and she wrote in there that I had potential. And that was the first time I ever heard that word or somebody ever told me like I had potential. And so I was like, dang, I can actually do good in school and get positive attention. I'm about to do this. And so I really just started thriving in school, and it kind of became like that outlet and like a way for me to kind of like a distraction in a way from like, you know, home life, what was going on. And then I would say my second point where I'm like, okay, I'm about to go back to school. It had to be like after I had graduated undergrad. And honestly, I always picture myself going to college just for a place to stay, because we don't talk about how like once you go out of foster care and then you go to college, that is also a place for you to stay. And so I never really envisioned life really after that. I just was looking for a place to stay. And I remember graduating, I went to intern with the Congressional Black Caucus, and I was working on the Hill. And I was taking these phone calls and I'm like, okay, this is too much. These people are distressed. And then I kind of came up with this idea that I was going to go back to school and do social work so that I can learn the foundation of social work and apply it to the policy arena, because I felt like just, I don't know, like people-centered solutions were missing. And compassion, empathy, something that I often talk about on here that I try to live by is being empathetic. But I feel like all through that, I've always had some supporter, like teacher or whatever, helping me along the way. Did not mean to go on a long tangent with that, but.
No, that's your truth. I would say that for me, I probably come from this in a more privileged aspect, which drove me to do the work. I was in, my biological family took me in, and that's a whole nother story about what they had to deal with. But I think I come from this in a privileged aspect in that my agency went above and beyond to have a connection with my school to communicate. And that's why I started going so hard. I started working with bigger organizations like the Children's AIDS Society in New York City, where they were working on, you know, getting foster youth through college. At that point, I hadn't paid for college. So I was like, please put me as your poster child, because I would love to see the day where every youth who wants to do a workforce training, whatever, to have that sense of self-sufficiency. And I don't think we talk about that enough when it comes to foster youth. Education is a mechanism to lift you out, one, of poverty, and two, when you know better, you do better. And education is part of that. And so I got into this work because I was so frustrated by the lack of coordination. And I just really used my experience to say that there are people who are doing this right. You know, like I remember being like 5 years old at the time where I was removed from my biological parents. Like, we just have to understand that leaving your place of a nurturing space, like your parents, that's always going to be traumatic. And there are back end results in a child's behavior. If we just start at that knowledge base, I think people would have more empathy, because when children go to school, they're there for most of their day and they're taking out whatever happened at home or in their environment out in that setting. And I don't think educators understand that enough. Of course, I think school counselors do. I mean, they have to be privy to certain things, but the relationship between agencies who have the caseload and schools who deal with the children and just that flow of communication was something that I had. I had someone in the agency only for educational purposes. They were the education person in the agency. Like, my social worker had nothing to do with my school situation. And so there were different things that I started to see as a program participant with this, my case was in this agency, and I'm seeing all these parallels, and I'm like, well, if it can be done here, there just needs to be a certain level of organization, a certain level of operations and communications that happen. And so that's really what brought me to go so hard, because so many youth in the foster care system fall through the cracks and then end up in another system like juvenile justice.
And I love that you had brought that up. And I didn't know if Casey and Alex, if y'all wanted to answer the last question before I kind of swayed, but if y'all did.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think back when I, so, you know, I always, when I tell my story, I always start my story off about how I wanted to go to school to be a pastry chef. And because I really liked cooking and I was into, you know, pastry. I had the dream all planned out. I was going to go to this restaurant school in Philadelphia, and I was even going to go do the Disney World internship because I ain't never been to Disney before. Still haven't been, but we got it on the bucket list. But regardless of that, you know, I had the whole dream figured out. And because college, you know, my adoptive parents had always talked about us going to college. Like, that was always like a thing. And it was planted early. And, you know, I was going to go to school to be a pastry chef. And then I entered foster care. And, you know, it's because I entered foster care that I changed my mind about going to school as a pastry chef and decided to go to school to be a social worker, because I just knew that I didn't want anybody to have to go through what I went through in foster care. And also knowing that, you know, everybody has their own story, but I also know that there are other stories out there that are worse than mine. And if somebody went through something worse than I did in the child welfare system, I wouldn't want that to be a thing either. And so I decided that I wanted to go to school to be a social worker because I was going to change the foster care system. And so, you know, I didn't, and we'll probably get into this later, like, you know, I wasn't the goody two shoes in school either. Like, I always was getting in trouble all the time. Because nobody knew or understood, you know, what I was going through at home. And then while I was in the foster homes, while I was in group homes and stuff like that, nobody ever knew that story. There was very seldomly few people that knew. And I quite frankly don't think anybody found out until I was a senior in high school.
And that is part of the issue. That gets me so angry, because why did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't your school communicated
right
and with, and why weren't you taken out of class to talk to the counselor? Why weren't you given the resources you needed to thrive in school? And these are the blind spots that need to be addressed in the education system.
And I also want to comment on that I have to also say that a lot of people who get into this field, they want to help people. This is not just about helping people. Mm-hmm. This field is so much more deeper than just helping people. These are real families with real issues, with mm-hmm. real problems that are just deeper than a little help. We're talking about deep-rooted trauma that has went from generation to generation to generation. And when you get in this field, you have to understand your why. And on the days where you're so, you know, bogged down by so much of the things that you were exposed to during that day, I'm always reminded by my why. And I think so often I've ran into social workers who they don't necessarily have to, you know, experience foster care to want to be a social worker, but it's so interesting of the different dynamics between me and then the other person who gets into the field, because we have two different mentalities on our why. Yep. And I respect their why, but it's so interesting because it's like, you don't have an idea. You don't have an idea. And it's like, I can empathize so much more with my clients because I really do understand what it feels like to be in a home or to be in a group home and just angry. You're uncomfortable. And so I think that's why I'm able to build such a strong rapport with my clients, because I come from a place of understanding.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And that leads me, because I'm kind of anxious to hear, after hearing Angie talk about her program, like, what was some of the foster care services or programs in regards to education that impacted how you thrived in school or you advancing past high school?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to the person who was in control of my school records. She regularly, so I was also a goody two shoes, always wanted to be in school, straight A kind of student, but both of my parents passed away when I was in high school. So I was not really in a headspace to like, I wrote a terrible essay. Like, I barely even tried to apply to schools, but she was still there in my ear. Like, you can apply to the one community college that has a dorm, because I know you want to go away to school. Like, mm-hmm. We're going to do this. We're going to get this in. But some of the things was just having someone at the agency dedicated to a youth's education. When I was dropping in math, it was really hard for me at one point. I got a tutor. Like, there were certain things along the way that was just, it was just embedded within the agency culture for this person to do, you know, like helping me fill out a FAFSA form, like telling me about different scholarships. I did not pay for my undergraduate degree. Granted, I was in New York, but I think that agencies have to think more innovatively about how they design departments. Like, social workers shouldn't have to deal with all of this. Like, they are already doing so much. How is it humanly possible for someone in an 8-hour day to really give the love, support, and nurturing to a caseload? It's not possible. And we just need to understand that people are human, they are tired, and the workforce is tired. So how do we organize our agencies better? How do we organize our communication with different stakeholders like our local education departments so that youth continuously have services and there's a distribution of the responsibility? Like, that shouldn't fall on one person. There should be a team of people. And I know there are, but like the way it's coordinated, the way it's organized, the level in which people are responding so that someone else on the team isn't burnt out. Like, that's a real thing. And I think when we think about organizational management, we need to think about agencies in that fashion too.
I know on my end, going back to what Casey said, I don't think anybody really knew I was in foster care when I was in high school until I got kicked out of my placement at 18. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, nobody really knew about my home life, and they probably assumed everything was good because I always made good grades. I was a part of choir. I threw shot put, discus. I was part of student council. I was a sophomore class president. And so it literally took me getting kicked out of my placement and showing up to school crying to people to realize, like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And then it's like, even in terms of school, I remember my caseworker to show up, see my grades, and like, oh, I don't need to do much here. You got it going on. Like, you have it together. But it's like, I didn't have it together. I was suffering with, you know, depression. I was erasing my arms, like, just to feel something. Like, I just did not have it together. But I guess because it looked good on paper, it was never no correlation between school and I just had the internal drive to want to thrive in that space. But it was until I dang near got kicked out of my placement, lived with somebody else, that I found out I had a CASA. And I'm like, at this point, I've been in foster care forever. Found out I had a CASA because, like, then it was Officer Wing who found the CASA, but now Officer Wing is my mom. That's a long story. But I found out I had a CASA, and it was like, dang, doors opened up. Like, if I needed something in regards to FAFSA, they found people that could talk to me about that. I wanted to go on a college tour, and they found money for me to go on a Black college tour. But other than that, I had no support in terms from child welfare agencies in regards to my education pursuit.
I will say my story is a little different. So shout out to Ms. Kramer. She's still a teacher in USD 259. And she's the reason I'm here where I'm at. Like, Ms. Kramer went hard. Like, we put my junior and senior year of high school together so that I could age out of care and get the full tuition waiver that the state of Kansas gives to young people. So I did not pay for my undergrad. Also, shout out to Larry Mader at K-State University, who always held it down and found me additional grants to cover costs. But she made sure when I was like sophomore and I was like, I really want to go to college, but I don't see a lot of kids in foster care go to college. She was like, no, we're going to change that. We're not going to put the narrative of we don't see and let's just do it. And so she went above and beyond and helped me get involved in Gear Up, helped me get involved in TRIO, helped me with like getting involved with KIAC. So that's the Kansas Youth Advisory Council, the O'Brake Foundation. So the O'Brake Foundation, which is an amazing scholarship organization in the state of Kansas, paid for me for my college from my freshman year of college all the way until I got my master's. So they stayed with me the whole way. They helped pay for stuff when I interned in DC through CCAI. And when I say it was never just my worker, and it was like, I could tell people at school to be like, hey, like, I'm stressed because I'm not technically supposed to graduate till I'm 19. And I only get the tuition waiver till the semester I turn 23. What can we do so I can go to school? And when I tell you, the people at my school pulled around me and to figure out how can we get her to where she can graduate a whole year early and only have to take the classes she needs to graduate. Because at one point in the state of Kansas, kids who were in foster care had to have 23 credits, but then a bill came out to where now you only have to have 21. And so it's just really the ones that you need. So having those people behind me really supported me. And even when I got to K-State, having Larry Mader to go to and be like, hey, like, he knew I was in foster care. Dean Pat Bosco knew I was in foster care. Them allowing me to create a space for kids who were in foster care on K-State's campus. Just people in my whole department where I was in school, just knowing like I grew up in foster care and pouring that additional support into me was so amazing. And Housing and Dining was the best because, as most kids know, if you're in foster care, a lot of schools don't have that like extended break where option. K-State did. So I paid that extra money. And if I didn't want to go back home to my adopted parents or my sisters or whoever, I could stay at K-State when I lived in the dorm. So it was really just like putting myself out there and being vulnerable and that icky feeling of like saying I need help to be connected to these resources for people to help me. And I'm grateful to them, especially the O'Brake Foundation, because I wouldn't have got my master's without them. But it was really just finding those resources and the people in the community.
That's dope.
And I think the stigma that you lightly touched on, Alex, is really important here. I experienced the same thing. It wasn't until my mentor, Jessica Maxwell, I love you, by the way, she brought me into the advocacy world. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. I didn't even know this was a thing. I can now feel empowered to say, no, like, I got all this. My peers should be able to get this. There is a way to do this. And it doesn't come out of like a sense of like taking something away from me or that I'm like a charity case or something. Like, and I think we don't talk about that enough, and youth don't always advocate for themselves because they don't know what's out there.
Yeah, I remember having that discussion with my worker, like, no, I get a tuition waiver. And she was like, no, you don't. I was like, yes, I do. Like, I know what I'm allowed to get. Mm-hmm. I researched it. And she was like, no. And we went to DCF and she was like, oh, she qualifies for a tuition waiver. I literally looked at her and said, I told you so. And she was like, oh, okay. Like, no, like I knew what I got.
Right.
The thing that, like, a lot of times I've worked in our IL system here in the state of Kansas. Our IL workers, especially Rayanne Rose, she's the best. She was my worker. They are going through so much already. And then you have all these workers coming in that it's hard for them to know all the resources out there. It is hard because there's so many resources out there. And I will say for the state of Kansas that are trying to help young people to teach them about advocacy. But I do know that if it wasn't for Ms. Kramer and it wasn't for the JJA officer who told me the first time I went to juvie, like, what are you doing here? Like, why are you here? Like, I understand you're in foster care, but you can make something out of your life that I wouldn't be to where I'm at. So having those people in Wichita, in Sedgwick County, tell me like you can do something with your life is the reason education has always been so impactful for me. Mm-hmm. I was always that smart, bad kid. Like everybody knows that smart, bad kid, that was me. Like I was just smart and I was bad. But I had people who cared about me even when I had to go to other schools. They connected me to the college career counselors there. They connected me to the social workers. They made sure that just because I was leaving Northwest High School, that's what I claim, where I graduated, what, in Dub. they made sure I had that. They made sure that those teachers knew coming in that, like, hey, this kid is in foster care, like they did for you. Like, they knew I did not care. I did not care. People could know I was in foster care. I was not that kid who wanted to hide it. Like, the state's my mom and daddy. I live with these white people. It's okay. Sorry. It's just, I told y'all.
Authenticity.
Hey, y'all can count on Alex. Keep it real.
Real, child.
Yes. Casey or Jocelyn, did y'all want to add on anything?
Did you want to go, Dr. Douglas?
Oh, you can go ahead. I'll wait.
Okay. I'm going to make sure I practice Dr. Douglas because you're going to get the doctor out of me.
So when thinking about some of the resources, I will definitely say when I was in college, so again, not a straight A student when I was in college either. I excelled in social work school, but I did not excel in everything else. So it took me a while to graduate. It took me 7 years. And you know, one of the things that I'm grateful for is the program that the state had, that was funded by the state, but was through Rutgers and a few other schools as well, was that they had they had support coaches specifically for young people in foster care that would help you as you were going along in school. And it was attached to your scholarship. Now, I got kicked out the scholarship. I lost my scholarship because I was on academic probation. That should probably not happen, especially for young people that are in foster care. But regardless, my support coach was like, look, even though you're not in the program anymore, I'm still going to help you. And so that is how I learned time management, because I did not have any sense of time management. Like, I was like, I ain't got time for no tutoring. She was like, well, I'm going to need for you to figure out some time because you're not going to pass this class if you don't get tutoring. And so, you know, I really had to change my whole mindset about school and really put school first. You know, I was involved in a lot of foster care advocacy work at the time when I was in college. And, you know, I remember one of my mentors telling me, like, Casey, you can have all the accolades that you want, but they're not going to mean anything if you don't get your degree. Mm-hmm. And because I was winning a lot of awards, I was doing a lot of speaking engagements, I was doing a lot of different things. And she, you know, she was right. Like, what is all of this going to mean in the end if you don't have anything else to back it up? Like, where is your expertise at? Your professional expertise. And so, you know, that really made me change, like, you know, my mindset about school. And my support coach, she helped me. She helped me graduate. I also had other mentors. Hey, Marla, one of my professors at Rutgers School of Social Work. And I would also say, like, I was just talking about this earlier today with my supervisor about a program that the school had. It was called the Summer Housing Internship Program. And it was specifically for young people who are in foster care in New Jersey. And it was like, you could get housing, you got your summer housing for the summer. And it was on four different campuses. It was on all three Rutgers campuses, and then also on Montclair State. And then also you got to do an internship that was similar to what you were going to school for. So I had the opportunity to intern for the Department of Children and Families here in New Jersey. And then also you took a class during the summer. And so you were getting 3 extra credits regardless of what school, they would make sure that it would transfer to your school. But I was already going to Rutgers, so it was automatically 3 extra credits. And I needed them credits. So to boost my GPA and to pass. But I just thought that it was a really great program. You got to see other young people who were in foster care, who were in college, that were just like you. You still got the support that you needed from your support coach. And you got to do an internship, which was giving you real life work experience throughout the summer. And not to mention I really enjoyed our class that we had. It was our social work class. I thought that that resource was really good, especially for, young people, because we don't get those experiences all the time. And I just thought, like, support is a huge thing, especially like when you're in foster care. We really don't have that much support unless we seek it out, or unless somebody sees us and is like, oh my gosh, I want to help them and I want to make sure that you're doing good. And so just to be able to be provided that support was really helpful and really helped me succeed in school.
That's dope. Then we'll go to Dr. Douglas.
Okay, so in North Carolina, I'm not, speaking down on any other state, but, North Carolina has a program called NC Reach and NC, what's the other program? Okay, anyway, it's 2 different programs. One is extended until 26, and the other is extended for just undergraduate studies. So when you age out of foster care, you are automatically given a full ride for undergrad. There is no excuses why any student who ages out of the state of North Carolina, why they cannot go to college. You are automatically given a full ride to college. Why not take the opportunity? So that's what I did. And the great thing about it was, that's what it's called, ETV, NC Reach and ETV. Boom, that's the name of it. So when you had both of them together, you got a great refund check, because most of the time they're paying up to the cost of attendance and not so much the cost of your tuition. So you're getting, I made it through college on the strength of these huge refund checks, which I'm so grateful for. But also, I lived at a children's home called the Boys and Girls Home of North Carolina for 2 years, for my 11th grade and my 12th grade. And they had a scholarship program. So after I graduated college, not only did I get a stipend for whatever I wanted, I think it was like at the time $200, and then they upped it to $300. But of course you had to stay eligible for these programs with grade, I think a C average or some other stuff. But so I was getting a stipend from them, but I was also getting these refund checks. So I was like, okay. But the only thing was, in North Carolina at the time, now the program has changed, but our 18 to 21 program, you had to identify your place of living. Now you can live independently, and now they give you the money. But at the time, we had to identify a placement, and the department paid that placement for cost of living for a board rate, so that you could come to the home during the holidays and all of that. The problem was, it's hard to identify people who want to care for older children. That is the problem. Also, for people who, you find people who just want to do it for the money, and sometimes $600 isn't worth somebody using your lights and water and all of this stuff. So it was challenging. I did find somebody, but I never actually went to the home. So essentially they were getting free money because I had to have somebody on paper. So I was actually homeless during my Christmas break because our dorm rooms closed. So I was, at the time I was working, I always worked during college because listen, we had bills. I had a car payment. I had all kind of adult bills that you probably shouldn't have in college that normally you would be supported by a parent in a normal situation. I had to fund it myself. So it was okay. I made it through. I was couch surfing at the time. I was working at a hotel. So my supervisor did let me stay there sometimes. But then I was talking to my children's home and I'm like, listen, I can't keep living like this, like in my car, in my trying to sleep, house surf, couch surf. It was a lot. And I was used to moving, but it was just reliving that foster care situation all over again with this couch surf and stuff. I'm like, I'm used to doing this, but I need stability. This is really impacting my mental health. And so my sophomore year of college, my group home was like, listen, we never did this for anybody, but we will pay your rent up to, I think it was like $500 and something at the time. So I ended up staying in, got in student housing over the summer. Another thing was I found myself excelling in school. Like you said, I believe Tasha, you said that you need a place to stay. And so I found myself going to summer school so that I can secure that housing.
Yes.
This is crazy.
And that's where my loans came from. Like, I literally took out loans, took classes that I didn't even need to take just so I can have money.
Absolutely.
To pay for somewhere to live.
Yes.
Over the summer.
Yep. And so when I realized that they would pay my rent, I was like, no more summer school for me. So I took advantage of that. They paid the rent. They paid the rent, gave me a stipend, and I was still getting refund checks from the school. Now, here is the thing. I just want to throw this out here. That doesn't really have anything to do with education, but definitely has a lot to do with being a foster kid. When I told you financial literacy is not taught in the foster care system, this is a huge problem. Because financial education is just as important as any other type of education.
Yes.
And I racked up so much credit card debt in college trying to support myself that now I am paying it back even still 10 years later. And so it's just like, we need to do something about this.
Right. even with your refund checks. Like, look, we all got refund checks because I had to take out student loans as well. And nobody told me, like, Casey, even though you get that refund check, you could spend it, but that you still got to pay that money back when you graduate. Like, it didn't recollect with me, like, oh, maybe you should just take what you need and give the rest back.
Yeah.
But instead, I was getting $7,000. Like, you know, I got me some money. Like, I can't wait to get this refund. And, you know, now I'm like, dang, I got to pay $100,000 back to the government. Joe Biden, please keep pushing it back. Because I don't want them to come and find me. But, you know, it's just those debt financial literacy. It's very important. I definitely agree. It's just as important as education because, you know, we spend the money. Like,
understanding credit and all that. Right. And I know we getting there on time, but before we leave, as we're talking about awareness and things like that, what are some of those hidden issues that foster youth may experience on campus that we should shed light to increase this 3% of foster youth graduating?
I think we need to bring awareness to institutions of higher learning because I'm almost positive all of them have foster youth on their campus. They just
don't know.
And Tasha, I think maybe when we were talking, we had this conversation.
Yeah, we rewrote my policy report over that.
Like, how do institutions of higher learning, now that we have the FAFSA checkbox. Like, how is that not being triaged by the Department of Education to let higher institutions of learning know, like, why aren't they going out of their way? Maybe it's an awareness campaign on campus, just mm-hmm. like every other awareness campaign, like other things you do in college that you should be safe about. Like, they're real campaigns that I know institutions can have. And part of that might be, have you been in foster care campaign? Like, part of the subset of foster youth who don't graduate are not graduating. That's adding to the numbers of people who don't graduate from college, regardless of like if you're in foster care or not. So mm-hmm. I think to some degree, institutions also have a role to play here.
Yeah. I think that's a very important point. Like, we need to document, like, how many young people, or get the data on how many young people actually go to college. And then also, like, how many young people are, you know, graduating from college. You know, all respect to Mark Courtney and those who were a part of the Midwest study. However, we have to acknowledge that that data is now outdated. And we're still going off of that because, and we've talked as co-host and have talked about how, like, we know it has to be more than 3% of people who are in foster care that has graduated with their four-year degree. And then also people who have been in foster care who have graduated with an advanced degree. And, you know, we really would like to change the statistic so that, you know, the statistics can be more encouraging. You know, when young people see statistics like only 50% of young people who are in foster care graduate from high school, only 3% graduate with their degree. You know, it can either, depending on where you are at in life, that can either be a motivator or a deteriorator. And I feel like we need more statistics that are motivating, that young people can see, like, oh my gosh, like, it's a lot of people out here with my situation that have gone on and did great things. Mm-hmm. And not just like the few people that, you know, are always highlighted or whatever. Like, I want young people to be able to see that there is a group of us. There's like thousands of us out here doing our thing, and you can do it too.
I like that.
Yeah, that representation matters.
Yeah.
I think another mm-hmm. thing, like, I will shout out K-State. They, when I asked them when I was creating the organization if they had the information of the young people, they pulled it off of the FAFSA. And I couldn't email them because of, you know, HIPAA and all that stuff. But I worked with Dean Pat Bosco, and he emailed them and bringing it to the attention of our Dean of Student Life. So then he knew that we were there. So he had an idea so he could let the head of housing and dining know. So he could let the department's head know. So it wasn't just something that I was like, oh, okay, I want to do this because, you know, I need a community. But it was like, how can I let other people know that I'm not the only one here? And that was really beneficial. And even working with like Larry Mader, who was our head of financial aid, that was helpful because him even advocating for me to study abroad and convincing the professors to let my tuition waiver pay the tuition for me to go abroad was something that wasn't even heard of. So I had to find those advocates and those allies on campus to be like, hey, like, there's more of us here. There's no way it's just me. And we looked at the data and seen like how many kids started, how many kids are still there, and how many graduated by the time I left. And it was shocking. I mean, I don't remember their numbers now because that was a long time ago. But it was shocking to see, but I still had those people on campus. So reaching out to those higher ups, whether it's your president at your school, whether it's the dean of student life, whether it's the dean of diversity, equity, and inclusion, because if we want to be honest, foster care falls under that. Let's get real. We are a very diverse population, and we need to be included on campus, and we need to have that community. So there's ways that we can do that, but it's connecting with those people on campus. And sometimes they may not have lived experience. And so how do we connect DCF, is what we call it here in Kansas, to those schools, so then those young people are being able to succeed?
And I just want to comment that I also think that, like, we should well, I don't know if you guys ever heard of LINCS. It might be called something else in you guys' state or county. But LINCS is basically a program, again, that supports youth 16 to 21. There needs to be programs at these universities that, you know, like the TRIO program, who are first generational college students, things like that. Why isn't there programs specifically aided to foster youth? Because most of us are marginalized. But again, these foster youth and just like having people to support you, having just like in TRIO, they have these student support coaches. Why can't we have these student support foster care coach to help us? Because it's almost like when we have been advocating and speaking up for ourselves since a teenager, and now we are reliving these experiences again as we maneuver throughout college, because now we have to be our own voice because people are not educated on what it's like being a foster kid. We don't know, so we're steady asking questions, trying to be an advocate for ourselves. So we need support and we need people who are going to advocate on our behalf, because we lack that.
Yeah. I would like to just highlight, you don't know what you don't know. And I feel like, you know, while being like the first, I think up until my sophomore year, I was technically an independent living, still in foster care, still had a chance case, child in need of services. And so I had some support there. Like the ETV was wonderful. I still like met with my caseworker and stuff, but it was just like, being in college, I don't know about y'all, but you'll see your friends get the little care packages. Like, just not having that, the mental aspect of it, I don't think is acknowledged. Because now, as I'm getting ready to transition out of care, and then once foster care is over, it's like, whoa, I just experienced this. Like, a lot, big part of my life is no longer there. So, for me, not only is just the couch surfing, homelessness part an issue, just that coping and processing that I just aged out of foster care. And then, I was just dealing with a lot of emotions. Like,
it's emotional to be in college dealing with the things that I'm like. I think for me and my biological family was very supportive, like, but it's also like family weekend was hard for me too. Still, like, there was still an element of like deep emotions. My parents will never come because they're not here anymore. Like, and there's so many layers on top of that when it comes to, even if you're getting refund checks, you're thinking about saving the money, not spending it on for spring break. Like, I never went on spring break. I never did those natural things that you would think to do, because in the back of my mind, I'm like, I should probably save this refund check. I don't know why, but I'm gonna just save it for now.
I went on spring break.
Yeah, but like, things that like you have to think about, because there's an element of adulthood that like you have to take on.
Right? Yeah, like I'll keep it a buck 50. When I got to college, I don't know what happened, but I was like, okay, I'm about to age out. I need to figure this out, because it's like that aspect of you aging out, but you don't have that forever family or forever support. And so, like, I kind of started, like, getting close with my parents again. But the crazy thing is, they both went to jail, like, a week before moving into college. Like, my dad left me a car. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm moving to college with a car. I don't even have the proper registration for this. And, like, both of my parents are in jail. So it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but somebody, please help me.
And those are a lot of big like emotions to process. So like, I know when I went to Oklahoma State, I wrote a thesis and I interviewed some kids on campus about like, what is it that Oklahoma State can do to make you feel part of the community? And one thing one young person said was like, when there's family weekends, why can't we have it to where like the kids who are in foster care get together and go to the game? Like, can y'all put us in a suite and it's just all of us together? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really powerful of like, yeah, I don't want to complain. Like, yeah, I ain't got no mom and daddy, but like, there's other people on this campus that I can go with. And like, they also talked about processing those emotions. Like, I just experienced this big thing my whole life. And now you're like, goodbye, you're 18, 21, 23, whatever your system does, get out. And they're like, whoa, like, what is this? Like, you were my parents for most of my life. Like, now what do you want me to do? Go to college, just be here by myself? Mm-hmm. So where does that support come in for young people? Where do we, how do we help them understand that? Even in high school, like graduating a year early was fun, but it was very stressful and very emotional. Like,
yeah, nobody talks about the voids that will never be filled. These voids will never be filled. And that's the part where it's like the emotion, like it, you can't control that emotional response. You know, like I love being in college. This is great. This is beautiful. But
yeah.
There's this.
You still got life. You still got to deal with life, like on adult life, like things that you didn't like. In my experience, like I didn't go, I didn't live on campus. I had lived in group homes, and I felt like going to live on campus was going to be like living in a group home. So I opted to commute to school, and everybody was like, "Oh no, it'll be, it's a different experience." And I was like, "No, I'm good. I don't want no roommates. I don't want to live on campus. I'm good. No, thank you." So I had my own apartment in an independent living program. So unlike everybody else, like I was going to work to pay rent at my apartment and pay bills because that's what I needed to do in order to survive. So I was working like full time and going to school full time. Trying to make life work. And then like even when I got to like social work school and needed to do my field placement, I legit was doing 35 hours field placement, full-time job, and going to school full-time. Like there was no other choice. And like, you know, I appreciated the fact that there were, in social work school, there were older people there, or older students there who understood what it's like, who had children and stuff like that, and understood the struggle of what it's like to have to do life and also go to school as well. Versus like, you know, undergraduate students who live on campus, who got mommy and daddy at home that are paying for things. And, you know, I really would feel discouraged because of how long it took, it was taking me to graduate. And I would see people who I went to high school with graduating and stuff like that from college. And I'm like, dang, like everybody else is graduating but me. But I also had to realize, like, at the end of the day, like they're going back home to their parents. Like they may or may not have a job. They probably don't have any student loans they gotta pay for. They probably didn't have to pay for their food on campus. They had somewhere to stay. You know, I had to really, like, you know, get myself out of that mindset because it's like their story was not the same as mine.
Yeah, that's important to highlight. And I know we're getting close on time, so I'm going to end with one last question for y'all. And it, well, not necessarily a question, but like, is there any like words of encouragement, any advice you would give to prospective or current foster youth or Black girls who are a part of the foster care system, currently in college or hoping to go to college?
I would say that lift your chin up. That's one. Even when you feel like you're not enough, because being a Black girl in higher education, there's always this imposter syndrome, like you don't feel like you should be there. And the devil is a liar, okay? You deserve to be there. You have worked hard to be there. And don't allow others to dim your light. You're powerful beyond measure, and it is the strength in you that keeps you going. I know it's the strength in me, all the things that I've been through, that just keeps me going, and just to know that I'm helping somebody. You would not believe how many people reach out to me, but it's the people who don't reach out that are watching, that are empowered by what you're doing empowered by what you have accomplished and how you're moving. And some people who have the same story, you know, as you and have been through the same things are not, and not as confident to come forward with their story, but you are empowering them to be confident and walk in that grace. And so I just encourage you to keep going, keep your chin up, and walk like you own the room, because you do. So that's my thing.
Yes. Yes. anybody else?
I feel like it's so much, but I would just say to continue to believe in yourself. Negative self-talk is a real thing. Mm-hmm. So I've struggled with that. Like, I've had to go in the mirror and say, you are great, in all these words of affirmation. And I think that self-love is important. So love yourself, love on yourself. And when you go out into the world, don't let nobody not love you the way you love yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would definitely say there is light at the end of the tunnel. That's mm-hmm. what I always had to keep telling myself. Like, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and you got this, and you are going to finish. And if you think about going to school, explore your options. Explore your options. Don't let, you know, anybody tell you that you can't go somewhere. You know, explore your options and find the right person that's going to help you and mentor you throughout school and stick with you.
Wait, let me piggyback off of that. Ask your agency to pay for it. If you want to go explore something, go do that CNA course. They will pay for it. And if they can't, keep advocating for yourself so that they pay, so that you don't go to college and take a wrong major. Do all the things to experience a field and ask your agency to pay for it.
Yeah. And I also say, like, you don't have to do a lot. Just because you're in foster care doesn't mean you have to do social work. Does not mean you have to do social work. I know a lot of us have taken that path or had chosen that path, but just because, you know, you're in foster care doesn't mean that you have to do social work. You can do something else and still give back to your community. So always remember that as well.
Yes, please remember that.
I'm going to say two things. So one is, if you are going to college, enjoy your college experience. Please enjoy your college experience, because going to college, let me tell you, I may have been broke, but I was broke with best friends that I have for the rest of my life.
Like, college broke is a different experience.
I am their godparent, like their children's godparent. That is my ride or die for the rest of my life.
Yes.
But that's, I built my community with them. With him and other friends, to where we had Sunday dinners and everybody was required to cook one Sunday. Now, not everybody could cook very good, but we all tried and we became a family. And now we are 30, 31, 29, and we're still close. So enjoy those experiences. Part of my first semester, I was always in my room. I was like, I'm just going to do work and get a 4.0. And then one of my friends was like, bro, please come to this party with me. Like, you'll have so much fun. And I was like, but I have a paper due in 2 weeks. And they're like, 2 weeks. Oh. And I was like, no.
That was definitely the life that I was living too. I was definitely
at 11:59 deadline.
Yes. Yeah.
Up late in the library.
Ooh, late nights and early mornings. Yes.
So enjoy that experience. And second, make sure, like, if you are struggling, ask for help.
Yes.
Please ask for help. Yes. There are tons of resources on campus, whether you're struggling mentally, financially. Just ask for help. Do not be afraid to ask for help. As Black women, we do not like to ask for help. And we think we need to hold everything on our shoulders. And sometimes you just need to be like my auntie Linda always said, life's roughest storms prove the strength of your anchor. And I never knew what she meant by that until I was like, I can't, my life is falling apart and I need people to help me. And I had to ask for help. had a professor who was like, you never smile. And I was like, yes, I do. I just don't like walking up this hill to get to this class. So I'm not about to smile to walk up the hill. But it's because I was afraid to ask for help about everything else going on in my life. And once I did, I met so many amazing people who have helped me get to where I'm at. So please, please ask for help. And if you don't know who to ask or know how to ask, we are here. We got you. We will help you find people.
Yes. I would definitely say, like, if you're looking to go to school, just stay open-minded, explore different majors, different careers, like, get a mentor. Like, I don't know how people do it. I got a couple mentors, but they are so, like, crucial in just, you know, throughout life. But if you're currently on campus, I say build community. And if you're a Black woman on campus, take up space. Like, do not limit yourself. Take up space. Just enjoy yourself and really build community. I feel like for me, just getting involved was a big part. Fun fact, I actually was homecoming queen at my university.
Okay.
And it was through getting involved. Like, I built a community that I don't even think I would have made it to graduation without. I say this all the time. Don't limit yourself. Like, I know sometimes we go to school with our best friends and we just stick to that. I met my best friend the first day of time I was on campus. We was in line getting our IDs together. And you know what? I was like, this is a new start. I'm just going to talk to people. I never knew that this girl was going to be my line sister, a person I celebrate every birthday with. Like, I'm gonna be a bridesmaid at her wedding. Like, I just didn't know this was gonna be, but because I had that open mind and was determined to build community and get involved, like, it just, my experience in college, like, skyrocketed because I was open-minded. And we can't say it enough, ask for help, talk to those professors. Like, when I tell you, life be lifing. You got to be honest with your professors when life is life. Like, I went through a lot in undergrad, but I was able to come out because of mentors, because I went to the professors, and sometimes I had to go to departments and be like, this is what I need. So that's what I would say.
And I want to say one more thing. Education is key, but there are always other options. So don't feel obligated to go and get a four-year degree if that's really not what you want to do. There's always entrepreneurial resources. Let me tell you, they have the best tax write-offs. Listen, I learned this stuff way after college, but yeah. So if you want to take up a trade, go for it. If you're in North Carolina, again, North Carolina will pay for your trade at the community college. If you want to go to hair school, they will pay for it because those programs still have a tuition type of, you know, you got to pay your tuition to go. So go and fill up those spaces. You don't have to go to a four-year degree if you do not want to. Don't feel pushed. Always take up that entrepreneurial space. So there's that.
Yes, and let me say, some of these trades make six figures. Yes. They make more,
more than that college degree.
Mm-hmm. They make more than that college degree.
Yes.
And again, ETV money can help pay for that as well.
Yes, it can.
Yes. Shout out to ETV and all the who do great work and support foster youth. Yeah.
And those who are wondering what ETV is, it stands for Educational Training Voucher.
Yes.
Yes, I had a couple of, I used ETV. That was very helpful.
Yes. Same here.
And I will say, One Simple Wish is a resource as well. They do help us a lot. So they're one of our sponsors. So shout out to one of our sponsors. They help out a lot as well.
Yes. Danielle and the team are amazing. Amazing.
Well, with that, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank our special guests for coming on. And just...
Oh, I think... I think Tasha's internet might have went out, but we do want to thank you all for joining us this evening. We definitely want to thank everyone who has tuned in. And if you're not following us on social media, please do. You can follow us on Facebook at Black Diaries of a Black Girl in Foster Care, and on our Instagram at BLK Diaries FG. At BLKGRL Diaries FC on Instagram and Twitter. And you can always listen to the audio version of our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And with that, I think we are going to say good night, and we will see everybody next month. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
We're still live because...
Yeah.
Hold on. Oh, we are definitely still live. Hold on.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Y'all have a good night.
Thanks, you too. I wonder if we leave the studio, if it will close it out. I don't know.